Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics, mostly British ones. I'm Eamon Clark, and I am joined by a returning guest, welcoming back from Melbourne, where it's sometime in the evening to my early morning. Welcome back, Luke Aldred. How are you doing, Luke?
I'm doing very well, thank you, Eamon. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I will say that you've done episode 227, Sin City, and 239 when we did RoboCops with Conrad in the film club. Here we are on your third visit, and you had an interesting suggestion for a run of stories. Tell us what we're going to be talking about today on the pod.
Okay, well, we're going to be talking about the Captain Britain stories, Return to the Captain, mainly from his self-titled monthly, although the first few stories did jump around in the fairly sporadic issues that he appeared in following on from Alan Moore's run on The Crooked World or the Jasper's Warp story, depending on how you title it. And this was a chance for him to get his own title for the first time since the 76, 77, was it, the weekly that first started his run. So yeah, I thought I certainly read it at the time. I enjoyed it, and I thought it'd be a good pickup.
Excellent stuff. So you called this, I like this one, Captain Britain, The Life of Brian.
Yes.
I like.
Ups and downs.
We both have, I think, the big hefty Captain Britain omnibus with us, which looks, we're going to be looking at stories from Mighty World of Marvel, issues 14 to 16. And then, as you say, Captain Britain 1 to 14. We're in 1984, running into 1986. Writers, we're going to be talking about Jamie Delano, Alan Davis, and Mike Collins. Art, obviously, Alan Davis. There's some inking by Noel Davis, who's a relative, but I don't know if that's his brother. Mark Farmer, obviously familiar for inking Alan Davis. Colors by Steve White, Stuart Place, Louise Casal, Nick Abadzis. Letters, Steve Craddock, and Annie Half-Acre, who is about to become Annie Parkhouse.
Oh, right, okay. Interesting.
Who is obviously long-running letterer, still lettering 2000 AD to these days. That, I think, was...
Sorry, I've only just spotted Nick Abadzis there on your notes, and I had no idea, because I obviously know him from his Deadline work, early days.
I think he just colours one issue of Captain Britain. So there we go. Quite a cast of creators. Now, obviously, you've mentioned the big elephant in the room, which is Captain Britain and the Jasper's Warp or the Crooked World storyline, which, as you pointed out to me in an email, we have actually covered twice now on the pod. It's the big one when it comes to Captain Britain stories, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was one of these ones where when I saw that you were going to be covering that, I thought, darn, I should have got in there because that's one of my favourites. And then double darn, you came again with them. Yeah, you did it. The second, Rob Williams, of course, yeah, who was just about to pen a Zenith spin-off, I noticed. That'd be quite interesting to touch base at throughout the conversation, I think.
Yeah.
With the, British comic readers and their view of superheroes. But yeah, certainly it casts a long shadow throughout this book. There are callbacks to the Jasper's Warp story almost in every issue, almost either from a character talking about it or a faraway look in somebody's eye, and they recount bad memories they've got, and there'll be some sort of flashback in the background. So yeah, so it's certainly it was a standout story. It's a standout story for Captain Britain. That was his first one, I think, his first breakout big story that got people noticing him beyond, the small readership of his original weekly run. It was a long shadow to escape from, I think.
So then we get to these stories, and you said you'd read them, obviously, in the past. When did you come across them? Can you remember?
Yeah, well, in typical fashion, I never seem to come in at the beginning of these things, and I saw the cover to issue 3, which I believe you've you jumped in there. We'll come back to that later. And that was quite a striking image in the in the newsagents. So I picked it up from then, and then managed to get the previous two, and then they got it as it came out over the next 12 months, 14 issues in all. But yeah, starting at issue 3. And when it first came out and I saw it had already started and I was late to the party once again, I was having sort of PTSD flashbacks to when I was trying to get the Jasper's Warp story, because that jumped around from Marvel Superheroes, Dard, Daredevil, Mighty World of Marvel, and it seemed to just be, you know, three or four episodes in one publication that would get shut down somewhere else, and it was impossible to get hold of. So it took me, I think I didn't actually get the whole story until one of the reprints that came out several years later. So once this came out, I thought, brilliant, here we go. I can, you know, just pick up those previous two and I'll be on it from the get-go. And as you do when something, you get excited about a publication, you really want it to succeed, you hope you're going to be in there for the long run. Unfortunately, a year later, it wasn't to be.
Right, yeah, true. So, we've got Captain Britain. He's after the events of the Jasper's Warp storyline. Can you fill us in a little bit about where we find him and his colleagues in the early part of this run, and then tell us a little bit about where it's going to get to towards the end?
Okay, well, he starts off, he's back in the UK, he's back in Britain, you know, standing moodily on you know, rooftops looking out as superheroes like to do. And he's got his hands on his hips at various points. And, you know, the first couple of pages, are very much exposition and recap about, you know, life trying to go back to normal. It's set, I think you mentioned, 6 months after the events of Jasper's Warp. Yeah, so the first few issues, I mean, I call them sort of kitchen sink superheroism almost, because, and I think they do, this was something the run did really well, certainly the first half, is it tries to put the captain back in a recognizable British environment. And there's several episodes, several instances where he is mixing with ordinary people. He's framed in, you know, amongst terrace housing, a recognizably British urban environment. Definitely not, you know, your skyscrapers of, you know, lower Manhattan that most sort of superheroes readership are used to. And it's quite a downbeat start. And I know we'll touch base backwards and forwards about why maybe the run didn't last longer than a year, or you know, the problems in general maybe with superheroes in a British comic readership. But it's quite low key. And after the, I don't know if that's an intentional choice, after the you know, reality bending, earth shattering Jasper's Warp stuff, whether they thought, well, we can't follow that with another one, let's just, you know, have a slow start and introduce people, you know, reintroduce readers to characters. But so on a double-edged sword, on the one hand, I like that. It's showing him, you know, mixing with normal people and sort of placing him firmly in Britain and modern Britain or the 80s Britain. But then I think, oh, you know, did that lack of a big punch, of a big sort of, you know, sort of hook, did that maybe not get people on board as quickly, and maybe sales. And I know sales were good initially for the first couple of issues, but they weren't sustained. So yeah, so we meet his, we're reintroduced to his sister Betsy, Braddock Manor. Is, you know, magically we found out in the Jasper's Warp run, it hadn't been destroyed by S.H.I.E.L.D. I think it was in the original comics. It had all been a mirage, it had all been a hologram. We're introduced to the supercomputer. It's full of tropes. Captain Britain, I will say,
yeah,
nicely done, but, you know, quite common tropes. The supercomputer down in the basement, or the caverns underneath Braddock Manor. So introduced to that as a character, sentient computer mastermind. And then all the while, we realize he's being shadowed by a mysterious figure in the background, which sort of culminates in this doppelganger from a Nazi version of the UK. Byron Braddock or something like that. So taking his place, which is quite a dynamic issue. And then the second half moves on to a bit more globe trotting, having adventures around the world in different countries and things.
Very good. Yeah, it does indeed. So it moves about a bit this run. There is a certain amount of sort of, as you say, resetting to be done in the first few issues. Okay, interesting stuff. Let's talk about the writing to begin with. Now, obviously, we've said Alan Moore is the shadow that looms over this. Reading Alan Davis's introduction to the foreword, I don't think they'd had a falling out. I think this was just Alan Moore being too busy now with his American comics work. He was starting to, you know, break into the American comics market, so he couldn't keep on with Captain Britain. Am I right in thinking that Alan Davis had an idea to continue the series with himself writing?
Well, he certainly seems very committed to the character, hasn't it? Yes. Isn't he? Because he takes over and shares writing duties throughout this run, and then of course he goes on to drawing Brian in Excalibur, and then coming back and writing, you know, later episodes of Excalibur. Yeah, I think I read that, you know, Alan Moore had copyright issues, various other sort of disagreements with Marvel. That's why he decided to walk out. And plus, I think, you know, he had Swamp Thing was obviously bubbling away that he did for DC. I don't know the full, I don't want to say for sure because I don't know the full story, obviously. But yeah, so there was a succession. Was it David Thorpe, I think, approached Alan to... Oh, this is going back. Sorry, that's going back before Jasper's Warp. Yeah, getting Alan to actually redesign the character. But yeah, I think he was just committed to... Because he was also working simultaneously on Miracle Man, wasn't he? Miracle Man stroke Marvel Man with Alan Davis. So I think he like enjoys the character and, you know, he wanted to be part of that sort of bit of a double team with Alan Moore. And when Alan Moore left, I guess he just wanted to carry on.
So Alan Davis and Mike Collins do a little bit of resetting at the end of the Mighty World of Marvel stories. And then we get the brand new issue one of Captain Britain. And if I understand correctly, it was Alan Moore again who suggested his mate Jamie Delano as the writer. So Jamie Delano comes in and writes the run on Captain Britain. Although, again, as far as I can tell, Alan Davis is doing quite a bit of the plotting towards the end of the run. And I think for the wrap-up issues, it's Alan Davis mostly, as far as I know.
Quite often they're credited as co-creators, aren't they? Not just sort of writer and an artist. And also I did read somewhere, again, this is, you know, just off the internet, so I can't vouch totally, that in some cases Alan felt that Jamie Delano's writing didn't quite fit. So whether he made some changes at the plotting end or the actual, you know, dialogue scripting end, I'm not sure. But yeah, he certainly reworked some of it, I think.
I mean, Jamie Delano is interesting because, again, I'm referring to Alan Davis's introduction where he quotes Jamie himself. Jamie said, "Alan Moore's like Stephen King and I do Clive Barker." And of course, interestingly, 2 years after this, he'll go on to do his long run on Hellblazer with the John Constantine character, which I think is obviously, probably, I would say, a better fit for Jamie Delano. And that Clive Barker aesthetic than, say, a British superhero who punches things.
Yep.
You know.
I tell you what I did. What did struck me reading these stories again is that I think they are very British, and they've got, I don't know, they've almost got, like, you know, the Avengers, as in the TV, Emma Peel, John Steed Avengers. They've got a bit of that sort of, you know, 60s, 70s British TV spy-fi of a gene going through the sort of DNA. You know, the character, certainly Vixen and her sort of band of minions with this under London. They've got this, you know, bizarre hideaway under London, which you only see once and then it's not sort of returned to again. You know, it's quite goofy. The crazy gang are very comical. I know Alan Moore created those. You know, Slave Master, the other villain, who's a recurring captain villain from back in the old days, but he's very much a sort of moustache twirling, you know, he's basically Guy Fawkes in a leotard, isn't he? I think he's just got you know, pointy beard and things, and he does a lot of standing around posing and talking about, you know, you are not a worthy enemy and all this sort of stuff. So they're quite often overused, but they're quite camp villains. The Vixen herself, in several cases, I don't know what the direction was, but Alan Davis draws her in a, you know, semi see-through frilly nightie, as if she's just been woken up. And, you know, she's smoking, you know, I think at various points she's got a cigarette holder. You know, is that very, I don't know, almost like The Prisoner, like I say, Avengers, that sort of slightly high camp villainy going on. But like I said, I don't know, even the goodies, I thought, there's sort of bizarre comedy, surreal thrown in. You know, she's almost like a Margaret Thatcher cross between Joan Collins at one point, the Vixen. The terrible thought.
You say Vixen and Strike and the Crazy Gang would not look out of place, particularly in an Emma Peel series of the Avengers. There is that sort of crazy 60s British aesthetic to it. Mm. Times and places. How do you put a comic run back on track after you've had a reality-altering crisis event? Maggie responds to these crisis events.
I don't think you can't follow one Jasper's Warp with another huge event. It would be like Judge Dredd, you know, finishing the Apocalypse War and then going into another huge event. Although they did that with Judge Cal, didn't they? When he came back from the cursed earth and went straight into another one. But as far as I'm aware, that's been the only case. So you need to give readers a bit of a breather, you know, especially because you often level the criticism of superhero things. They're always world ending. The stakes are always so high. So that's why I quite like that sort of, like I say, the kitchen sink drama of the first couple of episodes. And I think it's Tea and Sympathy, the second one. In the volume where it deals with the repercussions of Brian having a fight with Megan before she, you know, magically turns into a beautiful swan. She's still this sort of gremlin type werewolf character. And the young boy, teenager Mickey, dies, you know, quite graphically. He gets crushed by a load of falling scaffolding because they're fighting in this, you know, building site. And the next episode is the captain going to see Mickey's mum and basically apologizing for causing the death, which you never see in superhero comics. The amount of buildings they're knocking over, collateral damage must be huge. But for actually, and I think it's a great picture of Brian framed in the doorway, and he barely fits. His shoulders are massive, you know, super tall, and he's just having a cup of tea, you know, with Mickey's mum. And then, of course, later on, some, you know, beings from another dimension zap through the wall and spoil the whole thing. But it's that kind of feel. So yes, they had to take it, lower the temperature down a little bit and just sort of, you know, introduce the characters. But I'm wondering, like I said, the double-edged sword, maybe for people picking up Captain Britain monthly for the first time and not knowing too much about Jasper's Warp beforehand, maybe that wasn't enough of a big hit, a big catch. You know, I think generally throughout the run, the stories are quite restrained, aren't they? There's no huge, you know, world. And maybe there would have been if the run continued. Maybe this was just a case of, you know, they were going through. They had to move through those gears and they didn't get a chance to sort of push on to the next big event, you know, whatever it may be. But yeah, so it was necessary, but I wonder if it did harm the readership.
Yeah. We've mentioned already, we've name-checked some of the characters that appear. As you say, during this run, Megan will transform from her ugly duckling form into the beautiful swan, and her power set seems to expand almost every issue, it seems, as she's learning that she's got various different powers. I've always liked Slaymaster as a Captain Britain villain, so it's great to see him popping up a few times here. And he's now wearing an enhanced amplifier suit as well, so he can go toe to toe with the captains. Any other characters or monsters that appeared in this run that you wanted to call out and mention?
Okay. Well, in order, and again, this is one that you, I think I highlighted to you in an early email. One of the many callbacks to the Jasper's Warp is poor old Sidney Crumb.
Story.
Yeah, and his relationship with the Fury, which again is seeded on reading. I probably didn't pick them up, but it's seeded. He reappears. I think he reappears more or less on the first, is it Bad Moon Rising? And he's wandering through the streets talking about a nasty rash that he's got. And we don't think anything of it until we find out in Sid's story four episodes later, that's because he narrowly survived an encounter with the Fury, who just gave him a skin, you know, skin graze with this little harpoon thingy bob when he came through the dimensions. But then that was the beginning of the end for Sydney, because then he transforms into this, again, another sort of 60s classic, you know, British sci-fi, the Quatermass. I thought it was a very Quatermass kind of element, because he just balloons from this poor old vagrant into this monster with great body horror from Alan Davis. You know, he's got one finger is actually like a hand, and he's got two or three eyeballs dropping out, and it's all, but all the time Sydney is just moaning about his, he doesn't see this obviously, he's just after medicine because he thinks he's just got a bad cold or something.
Yeah,
you know, so that, you know, Sid the monster is a great and tragic villain. He only lasts one episode. He's not a villain, of course, he's a victim.
Sid is fantastic, and as you say, very, very transformation, infected by the Fury in some way, yeah, and slowly transforming into a Quatermass-like monster.
But even his backstory, which Alan tells in the sort of sepia sort of sketchiness, is that, you know, he was a victim of domestic abuse from his dad when he was growing up, you know, alcoholism. He was bullied at school. So there is, like I said, again, this element of kitchen sink drama through those early stories, you know, quite, you know, trying to making an effort to base it in reality. So yeah, he's a notable one. And then shortly after Sid's, in fact, following straight on from Sid's story, the gate, I have to get this right, gate crashes Technet. I don't know if I pronounced that right. They make an appearance. Now they are obviously, they are the new version of the special executive from the Jasper's Warp story that Alan Moore created, who I think as well originally were a Doctor Who. I think one of them
weekly, I believe.
Yeah. So that's nice. So now, again, a very British collection of, I mean, they're not superheroes, but they are, to all intents and purposes, they've all got special powers. They're all aliens, but they've all got a unique, interesting powers. And I think, is she actually called Gatecrasher?
It's called Gatecrasher, yes.
Yeah. She was a great sort of center villain. Again, not somebody that's super villainous, not someone that's super dangerous, but she cropped up several times throughout the run, you know, to stuff things up for Brian. Yeah, and then I guess the other sort of villains of the piece would turn into this, you know, the RCX, who stands for Resource Something Executive. I can't remember what the C stands for. Or is it? I'm not sure if I've got those right now, actually, now I'm thinking about it. But yeah, so they're the...
Resource Control Executive.
Ah, right, that's it. So they're very much, again, another trope. They're this shady government agency that deals with the bazaar. So they're not very nice characters. They are looking after the warpies. You know, very careful not to call them mutants, because obviously I think there's already too many mutants in sort of British comics and UK and American comics. So they're called warpies, these children that are born with defects and special abilities of, you know, because of the fallout from the Jasper's Warp story. I think, and then Vixen, of course, as we've mentioned.
Yeah.
So there's no one standout, is there? There's no, you know, there's no Daleks to the Doctor Who. There's no, you know, Doctor Doom to the Fantastic Four. There's a collection of odd people that turn up and odd, colourful characters that make life difficult. I mean, the Slave Master, as you mentioned, he's probably the most classic villain, and he ends up doing something pretty nasty to Betsy.
Yeah.
Although, actually, sorry, I was going to mention it on its own, but the doppelganger story, A Long Way Home. Now, again, when I was rereading, I don't know if you noticed, but there's something really clever that happens on the pages when Brian is in the other multiverse thing, the Nazi world. But at the same time, the panel at the bottom of the page is what's going on with the doppelganger back at Braddock Manor, and you know he's trying to sexually assault Betsy again. It's fairly brutal stuff. So you've got this fairly comic cosmic caper going on, but then you've also got this, you know, Betsy being assaulted by someone that is obviously the spitting image, the twin of her brother, you know, which is fairly nasty. But in each panel, the last panel at the top of the page is dealing with Brian, it segues into what Betsy's going through. So on the second episode, he just finishes by saying Betsy, because he realized she's at home with this other guy. And then she says, Brian. And then, you know, the following page, the evil version of Saturnine is seducing Brian. And then it switches to evil Brian seducing Betsy. The next page, Brian's wondering what he's doing there, saying, why am I here? And then it cuts to Betsy saying, why? Because, you know, why are you doing this? And that's just really clever storytelling. And I only noticed, you know, on recent reading what happens. So it's quite a nice, split page.
So that is, I think, issue number 6 of the Captain Britain run. We would say that throughout this run, Brian Braddock's sister, Betsy Braddock, has an extremely tough time of it.
Yeah.
At the hands of the doppelganger and then later at the hands of Slave Master, as you've said. Fortunately, she does overcome the doppelganger, but it is grim and gritty stuff. It's almost, as you say, quite a nasty sort of contrast to the slightly more colourful gatecrasher stuff that's going on in the parallel world. in the top part of the page.
And it does definitely mark, I think, the end of that first arc of stories, because you know, it's been sort of teasing who is this mysterious figure that's sort of following Brian, and you know, who are these people that are trying to kidnap Brian? Then it's all linked to this escaped Nazi doppelganger from his reality, and the gay crusher have been chasing him, but getting Brian mixed up, basically mistaken identity. So that culminates, and that sort of finishes that arc of the first half dozen stories. And then on the next episode, Things Fall Apart is when Mastermind, the computer, sort of reappears, gives himself solid form, and the RCX and the Warpies and Megan's arc comes into play.
Right. Complicated stuff going on in the writing, although, as you say, perhaps not one overriding story arc for this run. I would suggest anybody's interested, read the very complicated Wikipedia page for Betsy Braddock, because she's had a complicated superhero life.
Reading these again, I've sort of realized this really is where Betsy starts to take center stage and Brian gets shuffled off somewhat, because at the end of this storyline, or several episodes, I'm not sure, Marvel continuity is pretty confusing, isn't it? But she ends up joining, I think Chris Claremont liked her so much as a character that he then moved her to the Uncanny X-Men, you know, the main at the time, which was, possibly still is, I don't know, was the biggest superhero group in the, you know, in the world. So to the wider audience, Betsy has become the more famous of the two.
Yeah.
And she's indeed now Captain Britain. I don't know if you're up to date with Captain Britain, what's going on, but she currently wears the mantle.
I'm not current with the latest Captain Britain, although actually we talked about in our email, I did read the Paul Cornell run a few years ago when you did the Dracula thing.
Yep. Very classic.
Yeah, I mean, without too many spoilers, sort of the end of this run, Captain Britain and Megan are tucked up in their lighthouse, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Betsy Braddock is presumably off to America to join up with the Uncanny X-Men.
Yeah, she's some sort of recuperation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very, like I say, that second half arc, Megan is transformed. Brian's had enough of the resource control executive, and he, you know, it does a bit of a, you know, flounces out a little bit. I'm not sure you get many, you know, American superheroes doing that, but he takes his ball and he leaves. And they're more than happy then to install Betsy as the new Captain Britain, and also with Captain UK, who makes a nice return from the Jasper's Warp stories. And then Brian goes on this sort of bit of a globe trotting adventure around the world. And I will say it did remind me of sort of Doctor Who episodes, and the fact that every episode ended with a cliffhanger of basically Brian being pulled somewhere else. You know, it was a very, like I said, like a very British TV sort of feel about it. You just think he's going to get his feet on solid ground, and then something bizarre would sort of whisk him away somewhere else. And that's quite enjoyable. Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, because Brian's not another elephant in the room, I think. Brian's not a very interesting character in himself, is he? He's an aristocrat. Yeah.
He's a big lunk.
There's so many episodes where he just decides to, like, he just is, you know, rushing in there, zooms in there at super speed, and then he either gets, you know, whacked for six, or, you know, the wrong place or the wrong time, or whatever. So I think the story is
a villain. Yeah.
Yeah. The style of the story is interesting things happen around him, because I think in himself, he's not that interesting a character. Yeah. When he was created, he was a bit of a derivative of, you know, he's got the alliterative name Brian Braddock. You know, he had to have that superhero thing. He was some sort of nuclear physicist, you know, scientist whiz. Yeah, so in himself, he's not that exciting. So all these things, the writers, I think, make sure exciting things happen to him and around him that he has to then react to.
Okay, well, look, we need to talk about the artwork. So obviously, we've got to talk about Alan Davis, one of the superlative superhero artists. Certainly produced in Britain. What do you make of the artwork on these runner stories from Alan?
You know, I loved his work, obviously, as most 2000 AD readers will do when he sort of burst on the scene, and you know, his work with Harry 20 and the High Rock and DR and Crinch and so on. So yeah, I think it was great that he was there doing his stuff on Captain Britain. It's been noted that throughout the Jasper's Warp, he was very much sort of learning on the job and growing, you know, growing as a regular artist. He's in his stride throughout these stories. You know, he certainly knows how to get his characters, you know, pulling heroic poses. And Brian, like you said, I think he just gets bigger and bigger throughout the episode. He's a bit like Ian Gibson in the fact that he draws he draws sexy men and women. The men are big and broad and big chinned and big hair, and the women are, you know, as well. Everyone's got big 80s hairdos and sort of, the 80s fashions. The costume that Brian wears basically looks like body paint most of the time. There's no seams on there. It's very, doesn't leave anything to the imagination. So yeah, he's just very confident. And he was, you know, I think he was obviously towards the end. I think, is it the last episode is, I think, where it's really an American style. It's really crisp, because I think he just did the pencils for this one, and possibly
Zim Mark Farmer.
I'm just trying to say, yeah. Mark Farmer did the inks. So that is very sort of American looking style.
Yeah.
But also, as well as the statuesque characters, Alan Davis does the sort of Captain Britain flying at speed very well, which I think is one of those things you have to do when you're a superhero artist. It's like when superheroes do the Marvel, the MCU sort of coming out of the sky and landing on the floor. It's that kind of, they've got to do that zooming through the air pose. And like I said, Captain's always flying through the air and hurtling into one drama or another.
Nobody draws Captain Britain flying like Alan Davis.
Yes.
So good. Wonderful artwork. Just often, as you say, Captain Britain perhaps thinking with his fists as ever and just sort of flying into something and attacking the wrong person or creature. Some great punches, of course. It's Alan Davis, so he really knows how to sell a punch.
And also, talking about the Slave Master, I was wondering about potentially one of my Grail pages, didn't make in the end, but yeah, Slave Master does something really quite unpleasant to Betsy.
Yes.
And then Brian matches that by, first of all, obviously hurtling out of nowhere and sending him flying, but then standing above him with a right. Again, it's almost like a comedy Wile E. Coyote kind of big rock that he's gotten above his head. And, you know, the Slave Master's teasing him, "Fool, you have not the strength to kill," you know, meaning mental strength, I'm guessing. But then the next page, there's just a great big chud as Brian slams the rock down, and you see this sort of almost like a little cartoony spread-eagled character just with a rock and lots of cracks around him. So, yeah, he does that very well.
Yeah. He does do, superlative artwork, as I say. No wonder America poached him for DC Comics and for Marvel as well. He said towards the end of this run that he was, by that time, doing a DC monthly as well, which we were talking about off air. Might have been when he started doing covers for Batman. We weren't quite sure. We know he did do some Batman around about this time, didn't he? And of course, I guess if you get offered a gig with DC to do some Batman, you probably say yes.
The big ones, yeah. And I think he did do some sort of X-Men fillers, I think, with, I think there's one in the omnibus dealing with Betsy, really, and her transition into the X-Men.
Yeah. I should say there's quite a lot of stuff in the omnibus that we're not getting to. Some black and white stories later on, that Grant Morrison tech story. There's some Captain America issues. You say there's an X-Men issue as well, isn't there?
I mean, the comic as a whole, I thought was a great... I mean, the reason I picked it up as well, because as well as Captain Britain, you know, it was a good old, like a UK anthology comic. So you had a Night Raven, mainly tech stories, I think. There was an Absalom Dark, I think I pronounced that right. Yeah. You know, the Dalek Hunter. So just like 2000 AD, it made a really attractive package. And there were a couple of sort of, you know, secondary, less popular stories. But it was a nice... And I was trying to get them, the single issues again. I had them, but then, of course, as happens, you lose things along the way as you grow up. Because the colouring in the two graphic novels I've got on the omnibus, it's kind of sympathetic most of the time, but it, you know, as always, you know, like Alan Davis, there's lots of blacks, there's lots of heavy blacks, and I think black and white is how it should be read. That would be my preferred reading.
Okay. Before we get to asking you about some favourite stories and then a Grail page or two, why didn't the run succeed? Why was it only 14 issues of Captain Britain? What happened?
I think if you look at the covers as well, the omnibus that we've got presents all 14 covers. And certainly the cover to issue one, it's your classic sort of superhero fairies bursting out the page. You've got other characters from the comic coming out behind him. And it's very, you know, it's very Judge Dredd looking at the front cover, looking at the reader, you know, grabbing your attention cover. And then throughout the run, Captain Britain appears a surprising few times. There's the crazy gang on issue two, Sid's towering over the captain on three. But, you know, for most of them, they're really quite underplayed.
Right.
You know, they haven't got that bombastic American. I'm making generalizations here, but, you know, the sort of bombastic sort of American, you know, action-packed covers that you might expect. And even, like I said, the classic 2000 AD, you know, Judge Dredd, you know, grabbing the reader's attention by, you know, Cliff Robinson, you know, pointing a big day stick at you or, you know, pointing the gun right at you. So, you know, it's almost as if they underplayed the captain as the main character. And they're lovely. I mean, they are lovely pictures. They're lovely, I guess, acrylic painted, you know, fully painted. But yeah, I don't know whether they just didn't have that catch. So maybe, I don't know, hypothesizing now, but that's something that struck me. And that links to the fact that, you know, there wasn't a recognizable sort of big, you know, big villain or big catch. Also,
right?
Do British comic readers like superheroes? That's another big question for you.
Well, there's the big question in a way, isn't it? That we cannot keep, we certainly now we can't, but even in the late 80s, we couldn't keep a British superhero title going unless it was in, as you say, Zenith in 2000 AD. 2000 AD is obviously its own beast, its own distinct sort of thing that has survived. But yeah, we couldn't keep a Captain Britain title going, which is strange.
I mean, the most common superhero in 2000 AD readers will probably be, if it's not Zenith, it'll probably be, you know, Martial Law, because he goes around shooting superheroes.
I hunt heroes. I haven't found one yet. Yeah,
that's the one.
That's him. Yeah, it's an interesting one. As you say, Grant Morrison in the back here, and of course, Zenith in 2000 AD. And by the time this podcast comes out, may have, or at least we're getting a prequel with one of the Zenith characters, aren't we?
Yeah, the Red Dragon. So that'd be interesting. Written by Rob Williams. So I just can't help thinking, part of me thinks, you know, when I listen to Rob do the second Jasper's storyline, I thought, wouldn't it be great if he approached Marvel and said, you know, let me do something with Captain, you know, or some of the characters, you know, who knows.
Okay. Right. Favorite stories in this run? Any that you wanted to particularly pick out that you haven't mentioned already?
I did make a little list. Hang on a second. So, I mean, I did enjoy, even though I've sort of semi-criticized the slow start, I did enjoy putting the Captain just on a British street, knocking on a British front door.
Yeah.
You know, Tea and, you know, Bad Moon Rising and Tea and Sympathy were the first two. You know, they were solid episodic stories. You know, I've talked about Sid's story. That's, you know, quite a tragic story, you know, semi-Quatermass, but also rooted in you know, the everyday.
Wonderful story, Sid's story.
Yeah.
I mean, as you say, it is brutally tragic, but wonderful. Yeah.
A Long Way From Home, as I've said, the Nazi Brian doppelganger, the split story and the transitions from what was going on with Brian in his other dimension and what was going on with Betsy. Childhood's End, Lynn's got Linda McQuillan. We're introduced to the Warpies. Oh, that's actually one point I was going to make. I did wonder, they were almost setting it up for a future run or a future arc, because they were talking about, you know, the country was suffering some sort of PTSD in its psyche after the Jasper's Warp, and it wasn't quite right. And various I think it was Linda McQuillan for Captain UK said, yeah, like hatred and mistrust is growing. You can feel it. You know, they talked about people ready to, you know, get rid of democracy and a coup, which, you know, very dramatic. And then I thought, oh, this is interesting. On reading it again, I thought, oh, maybe they were sort of sowing seeds for some sort of, you know, quite dynamic story. I mean, this was the late 80s, you know, where the sort of political themes, you know, possible there. And that would have been an interesting, especially for the captain, you know, with the flag of the country on his chest, and, you know, where would he, you know, how would he deal with those kind of situations? But, you know, alas, it wasn't to be. We haven't mentioned African Nightmare. That was quite an interesting story, because even though it started off with quite a dodgy, you know, characterization of Dr. Crocodile as this disfigured African, you know, the villain, but then he turns out to be, you know, he's one of the good guys that's been used by the RCX. But it turns out that Jamie, you know, who up to now was just a bit of a flamboyant character, was actually
I had an older brother.
Yeah. He's, a slave trader. You know, it shows him knocking his ash of his cigar into, you know, a beggar's, you know, bowl in the developing world. You know, I've heard, is he a take on Mark Thatcher? Because didn't Mark Thatcher go missing in one of his Paris to Dakar rallies at that point?
Missing on a rally, yes, in the early 80s or, yeah.
So that was, I mean, that again was quite a shocking little sort of run of stories. You had the, you know, this exotic, like I said, quite a, you know, cliched exotic African adventure, but at the same time, you know, an establishment figure just taking the money for you know, and exploiting the developing world. So that was a good story. And then the final story.
Yes.
Auld Lang Syne is a real sort of, I think that was when they knew the title was going to be cancelled, and it was quite a low-key story. It's been Brian and Megan and Di Thomas, the Scotland Yard detective, are just sort of knocking around Glasgow looking for a you know, supposed vicious serial killer. So it's not part of a big finale of a big arc or anything. Yeah, and then before that was Hard to Be a Hero, when Betsy you know, brutally got her eyes taken out, and the death of Slaymaster.
Yes, the last story has a wraps things up, obviously, and a beautiful wrap up for Captain UK, Linda McQuillan. I don't know why I feel strongly for characters who are made up, but they, you know, she'd been through everything she'd been through in the Jasper's Warp. She gets a beautiful wrap up and end to her story in this one, thank goodness, which I rather enjoyed.
And again, that's one final call back to the Fury, who probably crops up. I think the Fury probably crops up just as often in this run of stories in flashback and you know, dream or whatever, as he did in the Jasper's Warp story. But yeah, you're right. And of course, Linda, Captain UK's husband, was basically a version of Miracle stroke Marvel Man, wasn't he? I think the costume was the same.
Yeah, I think he's supposed to be young Marvel Man?
Right. Yeah, his name's Rick, isn't he? Yeah. So yeah,
I think he's one of the Marvel family anyway, who was, we saw killed in the early part of the Jasper's Warp. Yeah. Right. Okay. So favorite stories we've done. Let's turn to Grail Pages now. I think I might have jumped the gun and sent you mine. So I'm gonna put the cover to issue 3 back in the game for you. It is available for you to pick.
Right.
I have a backup. So,
okay.
You guests go first. What have you chosen?
I put me in the thing now, because I thought you were definitely going to go for the cover too. Well, let's just assume you will mention the cover, or it'll get an honourable mention. So, first of all, I think, and again, one of the pictures that I just found amazing when I saw it in black and white, it's from Sid's story. It is, let's have a look, 1, 2. I think it's the 8th page where Brian has picked himself up. He thinks he's fighting the Fury, because he can recognize the smell. So he thinks he's up against it. So he just lays into this monster, who at the same time we know is actually poor old Sidney Crumb. So while Brian's doing his classic superhero thought bubble of, I can't let it get away, I've got to destroy it before it becomes more powerful. At the same time, Sydney is just saying, stop it, stop it, stop it, you're hurting me. And then in the end, he lets out this big scream of pain that Brian suddenly realizes the creature is, you know, he's got the better of it. But poor old Sydney just basically melts into a puddle on the floor. And it's the pouring rain, and all the, and the soldiers are saying that, you know, the police that have turned up are slapping him on the back saying, you did it, you know, you won. And Brian just realized that he's basically beaten to death an innocent man, although yeah. Sidney Crump, the monster, had actually killed people, but not willingly. Whereas, yeah, so that page, I think, is really good, because the middle bit is just the captain and this pile of flesh that was Sidney with, please stop hurting me, in the background.
So it's across the top of that page, we've got three panels of Captain Britain punching the crap out of Sid. Mm-hmm. The middle sort of horizontal panel, as you say, you've got that wonderful thing where they make the speech, the sort of the sound effect, the sort of backdrop. So it takes up the whole middle of the page, this sort of enormous lettering of, please stop hurting me. And then right at the bottom, of course, we have Brian Braddock's aghast face, realizing what he's been doing. As ever, flying in with his fists before thinking. That's a fantastic page, and I'll give you the one that goes next to it as well, that sort of completes the story.
Yeah.
Where the troops say, you did it, Captain, you smeared it into the pavement, we won. And Brian says, did we?
Yeah.
So I'll give you those two pages. They're absolutely fantastic. What else have you got?
Well, another pretty dramatic one is Hard to Be a Hero. Yeah, again, it's the one where Brian has come zooming in and he wallops the Slave Master, sends him flying, and then it ends with him sort of just standing with the big rock over his head. And then, as I said, on the next page, the rock comes down pretty hard. You know, and you've got the vixen there scooting out of the way with her. You know, she's even got a comedy, I suppose it's a Rolls Royce, is it, or a Bentley? Again, almost something that you'd see in Mrs. Peel and, you know, John Steed, is, you know, a conspicuous villain's car, if ever there was one. But yeah, some great action there.
And did you have, I mean, they're also fantastic as well, so we'll mention those. Did you have any covers you wanted to mention?
Well, I'll let you take issue three. So I'd go with issue one because, you know, it does what it says on the tin kind of thing. It's you know, your Britain's best superhero bursting out of the, you know, you'll love it when the cover becomes ripped, you know, they draw ripped paper as the character is leaping off the page kind of thing. And then you've got which is the only time it happens, when you get other characters that are in the comic behind. So you've got Night Raven, Absalom Dark, the Dalek Killer, and a couple of the other characters there. So the cover for issue one.
Fantastic. So we'll give you all those in the Grail Page Gallery. They become yours virtually. No one else can pick them. And I will post them on all the socials when this episode comes out. Yeah, I had already jumped the gun because issue three, the cover, Slaymaster versus Captain Britain, a fantastic pose of action by Alan Davis. A battle of the chins. These are two characters whose chins are both getting larger as the run progresses. Mm-hmm. Now, I have that copy of that comic signed on the front cover by Alan Davis. I don't have the original art, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, I would drool if I had the original art of that. But I do have the cover signed by Alan Davis.
Nice.
One of his appearances, which is why I particularly like that one. It's always been the one that stood out to me. Interestingly, if you'd gone for that one, my backup was going to be The Battle with Sid.
Yeah.
Because I think Sid's story is so wonderful and tragic. And obviously, again, it brings us echoes of the Fury. And then we've got Brian Braddock doing what he does so badly, you know, blundering into a situation he doesn't fully understand.
Yeah.
As ever.
Well, I do hope you show the, I was number four, sorry. Yeah, it's your number four. I thought it was number three for some reason, but yeah, Sid's story. Sydney isn't human anymore.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. So those are our Grail pages. We've talked about favourite stories. I'll ask you in a moment if you've got anything else you wanted to mention. I'll just say the Captain Britain Omnibus is apparently now, like all Captain Britain collections in the past, starting to go for silly money. It's now apparently £90 for the omnibus, but it does give you everything. It is only £32 on the Kindle. And I also noticed that the 14 issues of Captain Britain Monthly are 79p each on the Kindle. Now, I did buy the first one just to see what it was, and it's only the Captain story. You don't get any of the extra stuff. So for 79p an issue, you can get the 14 Captain Britons if that's digitally, if that's something people are interested in. The omnibus is probably your best bet, but like I say, it is expensive now. It's always had this problem, Captain Britain collections, that they go out of print and then they become highly sought after.
Yeah. Like you say, when I sort of go in and out of following what Brian's and Captain Britain doing, and whenever I try and catch up, like you say, with a Wikipedia search, it is head scratchingly confusing to try and work out where he is and what is and where he, you know, he crops up in bizarre, you know, after this and after Excalibur. He's very much a sort of traveling cameo who sort of crops up in various stories for Marvel. I'm not a big Marvel reader, but I try and follow what he's doing. So yeah. It's always a bit of a quest.
Anything else in your notes about Captain Britain, the life of Brian there, Luke?
No, I don't think so. Like I said, it was just a wonderful, slightly comical, slightly camp, slightly, absurd run of stories with, colourful, extravagant characters moving around and making life difficult for Brian, but threaded through there, like I said, there were some elements of quite brutal sort of violence that happened to several characters along the way. And I especially like the sort of rooted in, you know, everyday familiarity they did at the beginning just to reset after the Jasper's Warp.
Yeah. Okay. Good stuff. Fun to read the continuation of Captain Britain after all the adventures and excitement of the Jasper's Wharf. Which title do you prefer, by the way? Jasper's Wharf or Crooked World?
Oh, I think they're both quite evocative, aren't they? A Crooked World kind of sounds more Alan Moore. So I can imagine I'll probably go with that one, A Crooked World.
We should mention that this omnibus manages to not mention Alan Moore's name once, I believe.
And the author, the writer, yeah.
Just the writer, the author, yep. Yeah.
I mean, the two of them, obviously Marvel being Marvel and comics being comics, the Fury and Jim Jaspers do crop up again throughout, you know, the Captain's run. And they currently exist in, there was a big run called X of Swords or Ten of Swords, depending on how you read it. X-Men story about 2 or 3 years ago, which centered very much on Otherworld and Saturnine, and was quite certainly Betsy Braddock centric. And they've got their own little fiefdoms in Otherworld. Jim Jasper, a version of Jim Jasper's, runs the Crooked Market, and the Furies, there's multiple of them. Inhabit, I think it's called the Everforge, I think it possibly is. But yeah, so good characters never die. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know.
Excellent stuff. Well, thank you for picking it. It's nice to talk about Brian Braddock, even though he is my favorite big dumb superhero.
Yeah,
he's a big lunk because like hitting things.
Yep. I mean, this is, I wouldn't mind talking about MI-13, Captain Britain and MI-13. That's the next run that's the last run where he's actually written by, a Brit, Paul Cornell. From now on, apart from that run of stories, he's managed by sort of US creators.
Well, we may return to the world of Captain Britain in the future, the Paul Cornell run, which would be interesting to talk about. So yeah, great stuff. Thank you very much, Luke. Now, guest projects. Last time we talked, actually, before we do that, we'll just mention you've been, like Conrad from Spaceman 2000, you like painting some minifigs as a creative diversion. And you get Captain Britons.
Yeah, I got back into tabletop war games through COVID, as a lot of people, you know, tried to find something to do with their hands rather than sort of twiddle around on Zoom and all that sort of stuff. So that was good fun getting back into that after, you know, a long year, you know, lots of years away. when lockdown ended, it was great to connect, found myself a local club, lots of like-minded people. So yeah, used to stretch my creative muscles, painting, playing these games. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I got back to thinking about comics recently and Captain Britain particularly, because I started playing a game called Marvel Crisis Protocol, which is a little skirmish game. And although Betsy's a character, funnily enough, Brian isn't, because he's just not famous enough in the wider thing, right, in the wider scheme of things. But 3D printing, what it is, you can go on various, Etsy and various websites, and there's a... what you call them, proxies for certain characters. And there's a certain character called Captain Tea Time, who is, he's a spitting image of, Brian in his classic costume. So I've got him and I've painted him up, and I'll try and figure out how I can play him in the game. He'll have to be a substitute for another character and their sets of stats. So yeah, I've enjoyed doing that.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, I will perhaps also post those images you sent me of your Captain Britain paint. That's okay.
Very kind of you. Yeah, they're not masterclass by any means, but it's a bit of fun.
They are fun. Any other of your artwork on Etsy or Instagram at the moment?
Mainly just Insta at the moment, under Luke, not Dave. I haven't been doing too much. The challenges of being a primary school teacher and a parent, and I've taken their toll, I guess. Enjoyable though it is, but so there's a few pieces on there. I'm always open to commissions if anyone's interested, so they can go on my Insta page and have a look there.
Have a look in the show notes for this episode. You'll find a link to Luke's Insta page, and hopefully also to those images of the Captain Britain minifigs that you've painted. We'll do that. We'll put it in the show notes, Luke.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Luke will return, by the sounds of it, with some more Captain Britain in the future.
Yeah, I mean, the prime 2000 AD picks for my golden years have been picked. So, Captain Britain seems to be a scene which hasn't been mined as much, apart from the Jasper's Warp, obviously. But looking forward to that.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much, Luke, for giving up your time and for managing the time differences, the parallel dimensions between Captain UK here and the Melbourne.
Captain Down Under, you're down here.
Unfortunate name, yeah.
Mm-hmm. he never got his own title, funnily enough.
Right. And thank you, Jeremy, for listening to Mega City Book Club. As ever, find all of these links at megacitybookclub.com. We are on most of the socials. Search for Mega City Book Club and you should find us, including the images of our Grail pages and some of Luke's artwork and painting. And if you want to pick a book, 2000 AD, Captain Britain, or any other British comic, email me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com, and get in touch and we'll get you on the list. So that'll do us. Until next time, when we're passing judgment on another great book, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me. Thank you.